Chapter 1 of Being a Historical Narration of the Wonderful Footsteps of Divine Providence by Augustus Franke, dated 1705. Chapter 1, Section 1, On the Rise, Occasion, and Progress of this Undertaking. For the rise, occasion, and progress of the whole affair, some account thereof has been communicated to the public some years since, which I shall here summarily repeat and afterwards bring down the narrative to the present time. 'Tis a custom of long standing, as well in this city as the suburbs of Hull, to appoint a particular day every week wherein the poor are ordered to appear together at the doors of such charitable persons as are disposed to bestow their benefits unto them. Now Thursday being set apart for this purpose in my neighborhood, being minister at GLAUCHA, upon this occasion the poor flocked together before my door, and I caused some bread to be distributed among them, whereupon it readily came into my mind how happy an opportunity this might prove to provide for him also some wholesome direction out of the Word of God, more nearly concerning him than any outward food, as tending to promote the welfare of their souls. This sort of person, lying generally under gross ignorance, whence being void of all sense of religion, they betake themselves to an evil and dissolute course of life. One day, as they gave a tenancy at my door in expectation of some temporal supply, I got them all together into the house, and placed the adult persons on one side and the youth on the other, and then familiarly and obligatingly inquired of the latter what they understood of the principles of Christian religion as they are set down in Luther's Catechism. The elder persons only attended to my discourse with the younger, and after I had spent about a quarter of an hour in the catechistical exercise, I concluded with a prayer, and then, according to custom, distributed my alms among them, telling them withal that now for the future both scriptural and temporal provisions was designed for them, and exhorting them to meet every Thursday on that account in my house, which they did accordingly. This exercise was begun about the beginning of the year 1694. Being thus engaged with the poor, and by that means perceiving their ignorancy and want of instruction to be so great, that I scarce knew where to begin the cultivation of so barren a soul in order to plant therein a right apprehension of Christian principles, I was then hardly concerned to contrive a method for removing obstructions and making way for better impression on their ignorant minds, being wholly convinced that such deflection in matters of religion and on a religious conduct, whereby so many people debase their nature even to brutality and abandon themselves to the government of sensuality, must needs prove a visible overthrow as well as of religion as of commonwealth. And I was made yet more sensible of this by observing that so many children, which by reason of their parents' poverty were never put to school, and so never got the least tenure of good education, remained under the grossest ignorance, whereby lasciviousness and irreligion got the ascendance over them, and so being fit for no honest employment, they will not scruple in progress of time to commit theft, robbery, and other such hideous crimes, which they make the object of their study and practice. Having determined to put children to school, defraying the weekly charges thereof, I observed that they were punctual enough in fetching the money, but neither did not frequent the school at all, or when they did, yet gave not the least sign of improvement in their behavior. Section 3. Besides this, I was much concerned for poor housekeepers who forbear to seek relief by begging abroad, to support whom, in some measure, I brought an alms box, and this I caused to be handed about every week to well-disposed students and all such as were willing to contribute to so good a work. And by this method, in a week's time, I raised about 2 shillings, which I applied to the relief of the foresaid indigent housekeepers. Section 4. But after we had continued to follow this practice a little while, this box seemed to prove a burden to some, and I collected so little that it would not countervail the pains taken about it, especially being offered to none but those that were readily predisposed to acts of charity. But most of these were, for want of money, incapable of promoting the design. And as for the richer sort, we were not willing to run the risque of exposing our box to them, fearing they should refuse to part with the smallest limb of their golden idol, they having never had any true experience of a self-denying and mortifying course of life, though some of them, now and then, might make indeed a plausible show of religious duties and pretend to pass for good Christians. Section 5. So I laid this quite aside and fixed a box in my own parlor with these words written over it. John chapter 3 verse 17. Whoso hath this world's goods and seeth his brothers have need and sheddeth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him. And under it, 2 Corinthians 9:7, every man according as he purposes in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. This was intended for our tact admonition to all that came in to open their hearts towards the poor. The box was put up in the beginning of the year 1695. Section 6. The author's meditation on 2 Corinthians 9, verse 8. And thus I was taken up a good while with contriving effectual methods to provide for the poor, and each of them have been blessed in its degree. One day before I fixed the aforesaid box for the poor in my house, I took the Bible and, as it were by accident, did light on these words, 2 Corinthians 9:8. God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that ye always having all sufficiency in all things, may abound in every good work. This sentence made a deep impression on my mind, causing me to think, how is God able to make this? I should be glad to help the poor, had I wherewithal. Whereas now I am forced to send many away empty and unrelieved. Some hours after I received a letter from a friend, who heavily complained that he and all his family were like to perish with want, saying he would borrow no more, but if anyone would for God's sake make him an object of his charity, he should ever retain a grateful remembrance of it. This minded me afresh of what I had read a little while before, and made still a deeper impression on me, attended with sighs and aspiration. After some debates in my mind, I thought on a project how to relieve effectually this poor man in his present want, and yet in a Christian manner, and without giving the least trouble to any person whatsoever. This then I speedily put into execution, and the said family was so successful as to get within the compass of 1 year about 150 crowns by these means, and so their falling into extreme poverty, and was happily prevented. This proved a sufficient demonstration how God is able to make us abound in every good work, which I could not forbear here to mention, because it helps to discover as well the outward cause which our undertaking took its rise from, as the frame of my mind which the Lord upheld for carrying on the work. Section 7. The beginning of a charity work. About a quarter of a year after the box was set up in my house, a certain person put into it at one time in the value of 18 shillings and 6 pence, English. When I took this into my hands, I said in full assurance of faith, this is now a considerable fund, worthy to be laid out in some important undertaking. Wherefore, I even take this for the foundation of a charity school. I did not confer with flesh and blood about this affair, but went on with resolution, and the very same day caused as many books to be bought as cost 8 shillings, and then got a poor student to teach the poor children 2 hours in a day, promising him 12 pence a week for his pains, in hopes the Lord would increase our small stock, after about 2 crowns thus should be spent in the space of 8 weeks. The poor young vagrants that we had readily accepted of this new books that were offered to them, but of 27 books that were distributed among them, 4 only came to our hands again, the rest being kept or sold by the children, who went away with them and never came near us again. I was not discouraged by this disappointment, but having bought more books with 1/2 crown that was left of our stock, I ordered the children to leave them behind when they had learned their lesson. Afterwards we had a press made on purpose, out of which they took their books when they came to school, and when they went away their books were locked up again, which ever since hath been the constant custom in all charity schools. Section 8. Occasions, Greater Projects. After Easter 1695, this charity school was begun with the above-mentioned small provision. The 18 shillings and 6 pence provided not the only first foundation and fund the charity schools were grounded upon, but within the track of a little time occasioned and produced the building of the hospital itself. For the charity school I got a place fitted up before my study and caused a box to be fixed on one of the walls, at the top whereof I sat down these words: "For defraying the charges of putting to school poor children and providing books and other necessities for them." The year 1695. At the bottom I set down the words of Solomon, Proverbs chapter 19, verse 17. "He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he pay him again." About Whitsuntide, some friends came to pay me a visit, and seeing our endeavors were so much affected therewith, that they readily contributed some crowns for carrying on the work. And so, from time to time, something was put in for forwarding the design. Section 9. Citizens are willing to send their children. After Whitsuntide, some of the citizens, seeing that particular care was taken for teaching the poor children, grew desirous to send their own children to the same master, and offered him weekly 2 pence apiece. This obliged the master to teach 5 hours a day, who had now weekly for his pains 2 shillings and 6 pence. Among the poor, some alms were distributed twice or thrice a week, both to render them the more willing to come to school and to keep them the better in awe. When this little beginning came to be known abroad, several persons sent money to support the undertaking, and others a parcel of linen to sift the children withal, to prepare their minds by such seasonable benefits for an earlier reception of those good directions as were to be given them. This was the condition wherein our charity school was in the summertime. The number of the poor and citizens, children that were taught, increased to 50 or 60. In the meantime, the blessing of God attending these small beginnings was so plentiful that we were able not only to push on the most principal design, but to relieve also in some time measure the poor housekeepers, there being never any settled provision, but as God gave it, so it was spent. Section 10. 500 crowns paid down. The summer 1695, I received a letter from a well-disposed person of quality, wherein 500 crowns were freely offered me to be distributed among the poor, according as I should think fit, provided that I should remember poor students and let them have a share in it. Some time after, the 500 crowns were paid down, and I was not a little affected with the providential blessing attending in so eminent a manner our endeavors, and found myself greatly encouraged to carry on the design so happily begun, because I saw the benefaction of the Lord now grow more conspicuous. For as much as hitherto we had had but a few single crowns to be laid out on this account, now this remarkable relief being delivered to me, with an order that in disposal thereof I should take care of some poor students, I presently got together such of them as seemed to be of most necessity, and best worthy of such charitable positions, and gave them according to the condition I found them severally in. I gave to some 8 pence, to others 16 pence, and to some 2 shillings a week, so that by this means many a student who by reason of poverty could not have subsisted in the university any longer was freely maintained. The number of these poor students quickly increased to 20 or more, and this was the first occasion that moved me to admit poor students to partake of the benefit of the hospital, which had been continued to this very day. For at that time the spring of the Lord began to open itself towards indigence. Scholars and its emanation have never been yet exhausted. Praise be the name of the Lord. Section 11. This soon was followed by the liberality of another person of quality, who in the same summer sent 100 crowns to be laid out for the maintenance of our poor and well-disposed friends, sent likewise 20 crowns towards upholding the charity school, so that God mightily supported what was once begun, and his bounty streamed down more and more plentiful, to show us he was ready to do still greater things if we could but believe. Section 12. About harvest, I was to provide a room for the charity school, and there being no consistency in the personage house, I hired a room in the next house, but the number of citizens and of poor people's children increased to that degree that I found myself under necessity to hire one room more at the beginning of winter, and thereupon I divided the children. They appointed a particular master to introduce the citizens' children, and another to manage the poor children. Each of these masters taught 4 hours a day, and had 0.5 crown apiece allowed them weekly, besides lodging and firing. Section 13. But now I saw how all our endeavors, even upon these very children, which seemed the most hopeful, were very much frustrated, because those good impressions, which perhaps during their stay in the school were stamped on their mind, were obliterated again whilst they were abroad, and so the intended rectification of their ill habits was much obstructed. This made me resolve to single out some children, and to venture upon their maintenance and their education too. And this was the first occasion that prepared my mind to concern measures for setting up a hospital, even before I knew of any fund whereon to raise my design. When I came to discover this project to some well-meaning friends, I presently found one well-disposed person who freely inclined to contribute 500 crowns in order to facilitate this business, the interest whereof is 5 and 20 crowns he ordered yearly to be paid about Christmas, which has been done duly ever since. When I saw this blessing of God, I looked out for some one fatherless child to be trained up by this yearly revenue. But so it happened that 4 fatherless and motherless sisters were presented to me, from amongst whom I was to choose one. I ventured in the name of God to take them all 4, but one of them being provided for by others, I took the remaining 3, and the place for the 4th was presently supplied by another. These 4 I put out to persons that had a good sense of religion to be educated by them, allowing 2 shillings a week for each of them. But now that happened to me, which is usual to persons under such circumstances as mine were. I mean, if one hath but courage enough to bestow 1 groat upon the poor, he afterwards will be as willing to part with a crown. Having thus made a beginning in the name of God to take effectual care of some poor without unsettled provisions, without any regard to human supports, I relied entirely upon him, and so did not scruple to make daily addition to the number of our children. Thus the first foundation of our hospital was laid, neither upon any settled fund gathered in beforehand for this purpose, neither upon any sure promise of great persons, as if they had engaged their word to defray the cost and supply us with everything necessary for carrying on this affair, as hath been since reported by some and conjured by others, it being entirely grounded upon the providence of our great God. Section 15. the next day after I had provided for the aforesaid four fatherless children, two more came in, and the day after that another. 2 days after this, one more, and a week after another was taken in. And so about the 16th of November, the number amounted to 9, which were committed to the care of several persons of known integrity. For these I appointed a student of divinity, whose name is George Henry Newballer, to be their overseer or inspector, who was instructed with all things necessary for their maintenance, an account whereof he afterwards delivered to me, and took care they should want nothing material for a good education. And thus we had poor children brought together, even before we had built or bought a house for them. Section 16. In the meantime, I found myself effectually supported by his hand, who is the true father of the fatherless, and who is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we think or ask, and this even beyond the expectation and dictates of my own foolish and scrupulous reason. For he inclined the heart of the same person of quality who had contributed in ready money the above-mentioned 500 crowns to make a generous addition to it and to lay out the sum of 1,000 crowns more for the same use. In the midst of the winter, another person of eminent degree was moved to supply us with 300 crowns to promote the education of the poor. Another person sent also 100 crowns, not to mention now other small sums which fell in at several times. Being thus supplied and sustained by the mercy of God, we were not only enabled to lend a helping hand to many poor students to defray the charge of maintaining the orphans, to provide them with linen and cloth, and to keep up our charity school in a first flourishing state, but now a house was purchased, and about the spring also a back house added. For as the undertaking once was begun in faith, so it was now to be advanced in the same single-mindedness of mind and entire dependency on God, without entering into disputes with the pushing and nice suggestions of human reason, which, foreseeing a future want, is too apt to fly back and forth even the best ordered and concerted measures. Wherefore, saying aside all such superstitious apprehensions, we begun to lay a firm foundation of a hospital. However, we took care not to misspend so much as a farthing, but to provide only such things as were absolutely necessary for the maintenance of the poor. Section 17. Now, as soon as the back house was put into pretty good repair, and partly by mending the old rooms, partly by addition of some new ones, fitted up for the reception of the poor children, I removed the 12 orphans, for so many we had now got together, from the persons hitherto instructed with their care, and lodged them in this house, where the above-mentioned student, who was their overseer, undertook the management of them, and furnished them with diet, cloth, bedding, and other necessities, etc., and training them up in cleanliness, provided them with good schooling, kept them in good order and discipline, and so proved a father to them. This was begun in the year 1696, a week before Whitsuntide. Section 18. Under this kind of management, the children were about 7 weeks, and the Lord graciously relieving our wants, so favored the design that by little and little a larger project was set on foot to bring the hospital to a firmer and more complete settlement. So we got together not only all necessary utensils and furniture, especially a good many bedsteads and feather beds, because we thought there was sufficient reason to lay every child by himself. But there was also a well and a cellar dug, and both of them were finished by the time of harvest, 1696. And now the number of the children being increased to 18, I found myself obliged to appoint a distinct person to look after their diet, the whole proving too heavy a task for one single man. Section 19. In the meantime, I ordered the poor students to come every week at a set time to fetch their allowance, and a particular care was taken to regulate their manners and studies, and to influence them with a regard of the honor of God in persecuting the same, and so to spend the benefit bestowed on them answerable to the design proposed therein. However, I met with such difficulties in bringing them to an apprehension thereof that I thought myself unable to prevent their misspending spending some of the money, especially in such a company of young and extravagant persons. This then made me resolved in the name of God freely to board all these students instead of the ready money hitherto distributed among them, that so I might presently cure the aforesaid disorders. So I cast myself upon the providence of the Lord, hoping that His bounty from time to time would supply us with such relief as was sufficient for them. This manner of proceeding taught me, 1, that this way of managing poor students proved more beneficial for them, that though it was more expensive than the former. 2, how fair an opportunity this might be to discover more and more the temper and disposition of each of them, and so to keep under stricter awe the whole tenure of their conversation. 3, how it might prove a means to detect any among them who perhaps were not under such necessity as they gave out. For these would not rather withdraw from such mean provision and look for more dainty free fare to gratify their sensuality. Towards the 13th of September, 1696, when two such tables for poor students were set up. For regulation of their manners at table, several others were compiled to prevent all sorts of disorders and indecencies. Out of the number of these students, the masters were chosen for the charity school and care taken that everything might be done with mutual concurrence. Section 20. The number of classes being now increased and the tables for the students set up, one house would not serve our turn, and I was compelled to look out for more room, and so to hire another house which was the very next to our hospital. And in this I lodged the steward and 2 yards being brought into one sometime after I bought this house for 300 crowns. Section 21. As the first beginning for laying a foundation of this work was occasioned by the poor that begged at the door, so afterwards an especial care was constantly taken, not only for this sort of children, but also for people broken with old age and poverty. And as heretofore, Thursday was fixed for distributing alms amongst them, so afterwards Tuesday was added, wherein they are catechismed, and when that is over they receive the charity. That sort of beggars that come from other parts and are furnished with testimonials, if they come in the forenoon, are ordered to meet in a fixed place about 11 o'clock, but if they come in the afternoon, they are ordered to appear the same place about 5, if it be in summertime, but when the days begin to shorten, about 3 or 4. Where they first are instructed in the principles of piety out of the scriptures, and afterwards are relieved. Section 22. No less care has been taken for the better regulation of the charity school. At first it was divided into 2 classes, one appointed for poor boys, the other for poor girls. But when these came to be overstocked, new distinctions were contrived according to the age and stature of the children, so that the whole is now divided into 4 forms or classes. That is, 1 for the bigger and 1 for the lesser boys, and so likewise for the girls. These 4 classes have hitherto been constantly maintained, each of them having a particular master assigned with a room fit for their purpose and the books necessary, so that the whole crowd of beggarly children dispersed all about the town, and as many as are in no condition to pay for their schooling, may freely enjoy here the benefit of being taught gracious. Section 23. These schools have been likewise promoted, which are set up at the request of the citizens for their children. And another was set up in the month of September 1697 for such of the citizens' boys as are to be instructed in the foundation points of learning. But in the year 1699, on the 18th of May, this school was united with the class of the poor children which are taught languages and sciences, whereupon they were divided into 3 classes in all, as well to keep them more easily in order as to manage them the better according to the different degrees of their proficiency, each of them being governed by distinct masters who are to teach them both Latin, Greek, and Hebrew, with history, geography, geometry, music, and botany. There have in like manner been schoolmasters appointed in other places for such children as were either wholly excluded the benefit of the public schools by reason of the remote distance of their parents, or else came but very seldom, and that too at unseasonable hours. As for the maintenance of the schools for citizens, children, the parents contributed something to support them, but that not sufficing for the full maintenance thereof, I have been necessary to supply the rest out of that stock divine providence hitherto hath provided for the poor and the charity schools, that so I might prevent their coming to nothing. Section 24. It was found necessary to appoint two masters for the fatherless children, one for the boys and one for the girls. And if any among the boys were observed to be of good nature, parts, and quick apprehension, such were singled out from amongst the rest and provided with particular masters to instruct them not only in writing and arithmetic, but also in languages and sciences, as was mentioned before. And this practice has been continued to this present time. The rest of the boys, which are to be bred to handicraft trades, are put into two ranks and taught by several masters. Section 25. After some time, the number as well of the poor children as of the students increasing in the small house, which was at first provided for them, proving now too straight, I was obliged to think of procuring one that was bigger. But the setting up of hospitals being yet an uncommon thing in this country, I resolved to make some inquiry into the nature of such as had been erected in other parts, because of the accounts which either in print or in manuscript came to in my hands about this affair and did not satisfy me. I further resolved to send the aforesaid George Henry Newbold into London, the seat of good charity schools and colleges of this nature, who there upon was dispatched hence June the 2nd, the year 1697, and his main scope was to take an exact survey of the hospitals there, of their structure and their orders, with the manners of carrying on such works, and to take particular notice of all such things as might anyway be helpful to us in erecting the House of Charity. Section 26. Section 26. In the meantime, we did not think we should lie under any pressing necessity of making too much haste to expect that our design, because we had brought for a sum of 1,950 crowns the house called the Golden Eagle, lying without the gate called Ranshna Gate, R-A-N-N-I-S-H, and the garden there upon belonging, and this we designed to fit up for the reception of all our poor. But we quickly found that this house being built for an inn would not afford such conveniences as were requested for a hospital. Section 27. Besides this, we were also to consider that others offered to build an ale house directly over against the said Golden Eagle, and this tending to the no small disadvantage of the hospital, I found myself under necessity to purchase that ground too, promising withal to fill up that empty space with some useful building, and further line myself under other tedious and pressing circumstances occasioned as well by the house I had bought as by the several houses already hired for a pretty large rent. I was excited more and more to the following attempt. Section 28. As the whole affair was never undertaken upon any settled provision, but in singleness of heart and entire dependency upon God Almighty, so I had not as much now as would suffice to erect a small house, much less a large and public hospital. Yet the Lord, by his infinite mercy, supported me with such presence of mind, for which his name be praised, that I immediately resolved to lay the foundation of a new building in the place that was before bought. For this purpose I recalled out of Holland the above-mentioned Newballer in the year 1698, July the 5th. The place being surveyed and adjusted, they began to break ground, which was finished a few days after. On the 13th of July, the foundation for our hospital was laid in the name of God. The Lord had provided so much money in a readiness as enabled us to procure a good quantity of timber. But as for the building itself, I was now to wait upon God, and from week to week to receive at his hand what he would be graciously pleased to furnish me with for carrying on the same. Section 29. When I first went about this work, my design was indeed to set up only a timber house, and accordingly the foundation was laid several foot long, suitable to the projected building. But in the meantime, the master builder, using several weighty arguments, made me change my first resolution and to declare for a building of stone, especially after he had conferred about this affair with divers other skillful and eminent men, by whose approbation I was still more confirmed in this design. Another inducement was that, having about Easter in the same year bought for the benefit for the poor a small farm with an adjacent piece of ground, there was in the garden thereof a rock which would afford such stones as were fit for raising up a wall. This proved no small advantage for facilitating the work, now resolved on, especially since some well-disposed persons who favored the undertaking did of their own accord offer to cause these stones to be brought to the place that was marked out for the building, which was done accordingly. Yet all these motives together did not prevail against with me to that design, if the Lord had not, as all along, so now in these particular circumstances, strengthened and inclined me to venture it upon his assistance, and resolved to conclude with was now to be done. So the work was begun without any settled providence, and the Lord from time to time seconded the enterprise with such a blessing that even the builders and the workmen cheerfully went about the business by reason of their pay, and it afforded no small satisfaction of mine to many of them that each work's day was began with prayer, and Saturdays, when they got their weekly pay, now and then furnished with good admonitions, prayer, and thanksgivings for the assistance we had that week received at the hand of God. The building ran up amain, and after such a rate, that in the year 1699, by the 13th of July, that is, within the space of 1 year, they were ready to cover it with the roof, though the nature of the ground required a very deep and strong foundation. And this was the reason that about harvest 1698, the structure was raised but a few feet above the ground. By this forwardness of our work, the Lord actually confuted the incredibility of that man, who, when the wall was half done, most presumptuously burst it out into this impetuous expression: "If this wall comes to be furnished, I'll hang myself on it." About Easter 1700, the orphans and the students began actually to dine in the hospital, and soon after they got lodgings in one part of the house. And last Easter 1701, the rest of the house was inhabited, which did not a little contribute towards accomplishing the whole affair. His Electoral Highness, to encourage these endeavors, was pleased to furnish us with 100,000 bricks and 30,000 tiles, which proved very beneficial in promoting the building, which we cannot but mention with humble thankfulness towards his Electoral Highness. Section 30. In the year 1698, September the 19th, his Electoral Highness of Brandenburg was furnished further pleased to provide the hospital with a charter, which afterwards, by way of confirmation, he was pleased to explain in several points. Section 31. After the Lord had thus provided for the orphans and given many happy demonstrations of his fatherly providence over them, he now further inclined the heart of an eminent and well-disposed gentleman to employ a part of his estate in making a settlement for the maintenance of some poor widows, and to instruct me with the management thereof. Accordingly, in the year 1698, about the spring, a house was bought in the street called the Glamour Street at Glaucha. In the summer, it was enlarged and made fit for the reception of four widows, a maid and a chaplain, into which one widow was admitted, September 19, 1698, and soon after three more. Section 32. Now in this hospital for poor widows, four of them are maintained, who, besides the provision of their lodging, firing, and candles, have 2s period a week, a piece to maintain themselves in diet, and every year a shift, a pair of shoes, and wherewith the compass of 2 years, a new suit of clothes, if they want it. If they are able to get anything by their labor, as by spinning or needlework, they may keep it for their own use. They have also a garden near the house. Section 33. For these aged widows there is not only approved a chaplain of good and pious behaviors to say prayers with them twice a day, but also a maid, also as was hinted before, to serve them, and buy such things as are necessary for them, and to nurse them as if they happen to fall sick. The physician that is appointed over the hospital prescribes them medicine which are provided for out of the common stock. Section 34. The real design of this foundation is not only to maintain these poor widows when broken with age, but wherewith to instruct him how they ought to pray for the welfare of the city and the whole country, and our sovereign and the whole Catholic Church. End of chapter 1, having been read by Peter John Parisis.